I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. When the Vietnam War ended in 1975, around 130,000 Vietnamese left the country. Instability in Vietnam after the war prompted another mass exodus in 1978. Seeing a humanitarian crisis, the US government lessened the restrictions of Vietnamese immigrants in 1980. And 2 years later, the number of Vietnamese immigrants in the US was over 250,000. 40 years later, those first immigrants have established families and businesses in the United States and defined a community here in Central Florida. Vu Nguyen and Hoang Duan are both presidents of the Vietnamese American Students Association at the University of Central Florida, but 3 decades apart. They join me to discuss the generational differences between the first generation of Vietnamese Americans and the next. Also, the Mills 50 district of Orlando is known for its Vietnamese cuisine. We'll visit the Mills and Colonial neighborhood with Tasty Chomps food blogger Ricky Lee. That's ahead on Intersection. Vu Nguyen is the president of the Vietnamese American Student Association. He's also a brother of Pi Delta Psi Asian Cultural Fraternity. Vu, welcome to Intersection.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
We're also joined by Hoang Duan. He's a past president of the Vietnamese American Student Association. He came to the United States in 1979, HD, as he's referred to. Welcome to Intersection.
Good to be here.
Okay, so I want to start with you, HD. How did you come to the United States?
Okay, I was born in near the border between Vietnam and Cambodia. It's a central highland. We were not that poor. We were not that rich, okay? The family has well connected with the South Vietnamese military. My father, after retired from the Army, and then spent years with the American Red Cross. So he is very well connected with the South Vietnamese government and also the U.S. So living in the communist state is not a good thing for him. They were like hunting him down. And also, you know, infiltrator that live in the South know, recognize him. His brother was also in the police force. And then one of his youngest brother was in Green Beret, officer. So my older brother was in the police force as well. So most of us are afraid they're going to be either in prison or executed. The brother was in the police force. Our uncle was sent to a re-education camp, or now it's, you know, we know it was POW. So 2 years in prison, two and a half years in prison after 1975. This is the month. April 1975, we call it Black Friday. So right after that, most of the men, maybe many of the females that associate with the South Vietnamese government got in prison. Some of them got released. So one of those times, the uncle and the brother got temporary release from the prison for, you know, like good behavior. That night, we escaped. That same night, we escaped, along with around 60 other family members and crews. Nobody know how to navigate. When we buy a boat, purchase the boat, we have to buy the cruise. So we plan to escape.
Where did you go to first from Vietnam?
Right. The location where we escaped was north of Cannon Bay. So we can mention some geographic or landmark that American would know is Cannon Bay. Is the naval force for U.S. to dock there. North of Cameron is Nha Trang. It's a coastal resort area. North of that is where we escaped. It's maybe 100, 125 miles north of Cameron Bay. We escaped, and during a monsoon season, because the Coast Guard, the Vietnamese Coast Guard, will capture us if we go into the non-monsoon season. Mm-hmm. It's like hurricanes here, right? We thought that we would go to some nearby, could be Hong Kong, could be Malaysia, could be Philippines. So we land in a sand dune that belonged to Philippines Islands. Got rescued by the Navy, transported to Manila, lived there for almost a year, and came here in before July 1979.
Was Florida your first port of call in the United States?
We landed to McCoy Airport right here in Orlando.
So when you came to the United States, you went to what became the University of Central Florida. You were part of the Vietnamese American Students Association, but right. Was there that strong sense of community identity within the Vietnamese American community here, or was that something you had to really kind of build up from the ground?
Right. Back then, we don't have a large population here. Very small. There are at least 4 or 5 air bases in the United States where, at that time, United States have permission to rescue the Vietnamese. They will land in California, in Eglin Air Force Base, in McChafee, in the central United States. Some of them migrate here to Orlando and live. But mm-hmm. majority of the Vietnamese refugee at that time will migrate to Houston. Folks that land in Southern California, they end up live there, you know, just right outside of Camp Pendleton. They started living in San Diego and Anaheim, Westminster, California.
What about now, Vu Nguyen? I mean, do you get the sense that there is a really strong sense of Vietnamese-American identity?
I would definitely say yes, because my father also attended the University of Central Florida back in mid-90s, and I've brought him along to some of our events and shows, and he says things are vastly different from the time he was here. When he went to school at UCF, he wasn't as active or involved within like the clubs and organizations, but he always noticed that there was a VASA around. Now, seeing how I'm involved with it as well as my friends are involved with it, he says that he wishes there was something like that on that scale, or maybe he was more involved with the community that we do have established at UCF. What we strive to do as an organization is create an environment where it's a home away from home, in a sense that Vietnamese Americans, especially young Vietnamese Americans who maybe are confused about their culture or maybe not just proud of their culture, we provide an environment where it is a community, it is a home where people can come together and, you know, make bonds and friendships, but through the medium of using Vietnamese culture. We do that by having an array of different cultural workshops or semesterly shows where we kind of display Vietnamese culture in a fun way through either dance, show, fashion. And it's through these gatherings and meetings that we are able to build the community that we have today.
Did you come naturally to that? Was it something you had to sort of find once you came to UCF, or were you steeped in that Vietnamese culture growing up?
My parents were very traditional. I grew up speaking the language, reading and writing the language. And, you know, I always like loved Viet food and our history and our culture. So it's something I already kind of had a background and interest in. And then coming to the UCF, actually my late high school years, I've already heard about VASA and stuff because I'm from Orlando. So I've already known that going to UCF that there is a Vietnamese community, whether it was established or big or small, I didn't really know. But deep down, I wanted to be involved in it. And that was my freshman year. Towards the end of my freshman year, I became an officer for the organization as a public relations. Towards the end of that, I was elected president, and then I've kind of taken the organization to the direction it's in throughout this past year.
So growing up in a fairly traditional Vietnamese household in the United States, speaking Vietnamese, is that common amongst your peers?
I think that there's a fair split in proportion where some are and then some kind of don't, or they did when they were younger, and then it kind of died out later on when they became more involved with the American like school system, and they're mostly surrounded around American culture. So that part kind of assimilated in over the Vietnamese culture.
Is it hard to preserve your sense of identity as a Vietnamese American as opposed to an American?
On that subject, I feel that America, in a way, we're blessed to have the opportunity to freely show, display, and believe in whatever we want to believe in and celebrate whatever we believe in, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, obviously. But I think that the opportunity is there to preserve it, but it's on you as an individual as well as your upbringing and your family to kind of preserve it yourself and kind of emphasize the importance of where you came from, not just where you live.
Well, Juan, if I could come back to you, I mean, things must have changed quite a bit since you came here in the 1970s. How are things different now, do you think?
I left this town right after graduating from UCF. We spent almost 12 years up in Washington, D.C., Virginia area. When mm-hmm. we came back here, the school probably tripled the student bodies. We got lost inside the campus. We didn't know that they even have a mall inside there. We were so proud that we find out that VASA is still alive and kicking. We're so proud of the younger generation that still keep up with the tradition, with the heritage, with all the events that we expect them. You know, okay, that's good, because you know we thought that it's going to vanish. You know, but for all the other ethnic groups, they promote their own culture much bigger than the Vietnamese. For the Japanese, you probably see the activities around here. The Chinese, they even have bigger. The Vietnamese, we were so proud to see a younger generation like Vu here and previous years too, that they continue keep up with everything. So, see, you know, from that, you know, we think it's still good. I mean, we're so proud of them, that someone, younger generation, may not know everything, still continue to promote, you know, our culture, keep up with that, and show example that the next generation will pick up and continue.
Is it something you made a conscious effort to try and put across in your family, keep that sense of Vietnamese identity and heritage and culture going in your own family?
Yes, most I would say most family want to do that. Okay, there's a younger generation now. They fully adapted to the American lifestyle. They speak multiple languages. They study harder. Many of them have doctor degree, advanced degree. Many make, you know, three times as the parent or grandparent. So they are very proud, you know, to keep that tradition going. And they still want to continue, promote and maintain and sustain our heritage.
We're speaking to Huan Duan. He's a past president of the Vietnamese American Students Association. And also Vu Nguyen, he's president currently of the UCF Vietnamese American Students Association. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. You can join the conversation online on Facebook and Twitter. Find more stories from our What is Little Vietnam series online at wmfe.org/Vietnam. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. I'm speaking with Vu Nguyen and Huang Duan about the differences between two generations of Vietnamese Americans. Vu, when you look at Little Vietnam now, there is this geographical location in Orlando that people think about when they think about Vietnamese Americans. But is that the way people in the Vietnamese community sort of see themselves? Do you identify with that part of the city?
Yeah, Mills 50 is what we call kind of like our home, where perhaps not, that's not the geographical location, like demographically, where most Vietnamese Americans like live, but it is where a lot of our businesses, shops, and a lot of our trade ports are, where a lot of people come to that area because that's where most of our businesses thrive. And in a way, it is central and heart to our culture, because like our businesses, like restaurants and such, that's where a lot of people get the idea from Vietnamese culture. You know, everyone talks about food, like pho and stuff like that. And growing up, I've noticed that my parents, like on the weekends, they would come down to that area to either go grocery shopping, because there's only certain things that like Vietnamese stores have, like groceries wise, down there. And once in a while, we always go out and eat. And I've noticed over time that before, it used to be just Vietnamese people at restaurants. And now I'm 20 now, so maybe like a decade of me really like noticing things. I've noticed now that there's a lot of different other ethnicities and races like at restaurants and such, that it's even more than the Vietnamese people sometimes. And I think that it's not just a place for our home now, but it's kind of opened and shared with everyone else as well.
How important is that area, do you think, to the cultural life of Orlando?
I think it's very central, not even just Orlando, but in Florida. I know a lot of relatives and friends, parents of friends who maybe from like St. Pete or Tampa, they don't really have the same type of community or neighborhood there, that they even though it's like an hour away, they make the trip down just to, you know, visit family or friends around the area, or just kind of like what my parents do, kind of go grocery shopping and, you know, hearing the local news and what's been going on with the community.
You've got to be dedicated to fight that traffic every weekend, right?
It's crazy traffic, yeah, definitely.
HD, what have you noticed in the way of changes to that area of the city in your experience of, you know, being here as a student, going away, coming back again?
It's still slow growing, in my view, compared with other cities. We used to live in Virginia, so we know there's a big area out there in the south of Arlington Boulevard, outside of the main Washington, D.C. area. It's getting bigger. It's grow faster. If you ever visit to Houston, you see it grow like 5 times, 10 times compared to 30 years ago. Southern California, the same thing. It's probably tripled the population there over years. Here, we still consider slow here in Central Florida. There's a good thing and a bad thing. A good thing is I like this town. It's still friendly. We noticed that when tourists come to town, they were looking for the 50 and Colonial Corner. And now with technology, even find faster. They will know where to find food because, you know, the Vietnamese tourists that came to this town, they would not want to eat 7 days American food. They were looking for one day, at least one day with the Vietnamese food. Mm-hmm. And they will find that corner. And we noticed not only from friends, but relatives also.
What about when you were a student here? Was that a gathering place that you would go to frequently?
That same corner. Back then, there were not much of Vietnamese food in this town. That is the only corner with maybe two or three grocery store, maybe one or two restaurants, small scale. Now it's getting bigger.
Bouncing off of that, I've traveled quite a lot and visited a lot of different like the Asian communities, especially the Vietnamese, obviously. And I've gone to the East Coast, like Virginia area, Toronto even, West Coast, California, and southernly Houston, Austin area. And I have noticed that they are bigger, and I've always wondered on a political and socio scale, like how could they grow faster or like even on a bigger scale than we have. And I think it just comes down to those are the places of origin where, like HG said earlier about the bases and how when a lot of Vietnamese Americans came here, they didn't really travel outside of where they were kind of dropped off. Orlando is one of the lesser popular locations for military drop-off or like immigration. So we kind of have to work with what we have. And as a community, I think from what we've had, we've gone far and that we will continue to grow. And not even just Mills area anymore, but I've noticed that there are a lot of other Vietnamese restaurants or shops opening up, actually literally going down the Colonial side. Mm-hmm. There's a new restaurant, Pho 88. It's a chain restaurant from the original Pho 88, which is one of the oldest Vietnamese restaurants here in Orlando. Closer to UCF, a lot of people go to Saigon Noodle and Grill, which is on Goldenrod. So we're slowly kind of moving east and west on both sides. So the growth is could be faster, obviously, but it's there. And it's definitely better than regression.
Do you see Little Vietnam, the area that we think of as Little Vietnam and Orlando, surviving into the future? Or do you think, you talk about the Goldenrod area, could that be a future nucleus for the Vietnamese community in Orlando?
I think it will grow in sort of batches because we have a main section in central Florida and central Orlando. And now that we have more bunches on the east side, it will just kind of come together.
Do you think it's important to have that central geographical location?
Yeah, definitely. Like I mentioned before, like people coming from other sides of not even Orlando, but Florida, having some kind of central meeting ground is geographically advantageous.
HD, I want to ask you about language too. Do you get the sense that there's sometimes a language barrier between different generations of Vietnamese Americans?
So a little bit about the Vietnamese languages, right? So we don't write like Chinese. We kind of abandoned from that characters many, many, many centuries ago when the Portuguese and the French, the Dutch started migrate into Vietnam and change our language. With that, my generation and the older generation can relate to a lot of Chinese characters, Chinese poetry, literatures, and then we translate into Vietnamese as well, right? And then we got years and years with the French. Many of our food, our literatures is in the French style, the music as well. Mm-hmm. And then now we can see it's started to migrate into American culture where the younger generation has started singing rap music in Vietnamese. So we can see there's a lot of changes over time. It's a good thing. I see it's a good thing. But then we don't have an environment where we can teach our younger generation how to understand Vietnamese poetry. So it's a loss over time. So that may be something that we can improve.
Is that something, Vu, that your group makes an effort to try and connect with?
That's always something that we've had our interest in, but we have a hard time working with that because not even all of our officers can read or speak or write in Vietnamese. So we appeal to more of what you might call like mainstream cultural interests, basically food, dance, fashion, things that you can show more easily without having to dig really deep to have a really good understanding of before you can kind of teach others.
What's the biggest misconception, do you think, that people might have of Orlando's Vietnamese community?
When we first came here, at that time, there was a TV show called Kung Fu. So when we first came here, the American thought that we are Chinese. Eventually, the local community started recognizing, oh, this is Chinese and this is Vietnamese. Okay, and so they started recognizing us as the Vietnamese. can tell right away. Even over time, they started, okay, your dialect, your feature, your you are not Chinese, you are Vietnamese. They started learning. But the misconception still, we and Chinese are the same. So that's one. Two is, I don't know, you watch some of this show that if you were the Vietnamese, this is what you do, you know? So some of that is still a misconception. The younger generation now completely American. We can see that they are 100% American.
Vu, what do you think? What's the biggest misconception people have about the Vietnamese community in Orlando?
In Orlando, I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of different other Vietnamese student organizations kind of across the region, the Southeast region, and a little bit on a national scale just because of VASA having a regional and a national hierarchy. And what I've noticed that maybe people outside of Florida think, not just Orlando, but Florida, they seem to think that because they're from Cali or Texas or the Northeast, they think Florida is a small community and that we're not as organized or we're not doing as big things and not as impactful things. And I think that's where they're wrong, because in a way they are sort of underestimating not just the Orlando, but the Florida Vietnamese community as on a student level, perhaps. And in Orlando, I'm quite proud of where our Vietnamese community stands and the fact that we've worked with other schools such as University of Florida and University of South Florida and their respective Vietnamese organizations. I think that a lot of people do underestimate us, and that in the following years we'll prove them wrong in the sense that we will outreach more than they will.
I've been speaking to Vu Nguyen. He's president of Vietnamese American Students Association. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
We've also been joined today by Huan Duan. He's the past president of the Vietnamese American Students Association. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Up next, Vietnamese cuisine in Orlando with food blogger Ricky Lee. Think of Vietnamese food, and chances are you'll picture the steaming bowl of noodles known as pho. Orlando boasts some great pho restaurants, but as we learned from food blogger Ricky Lee, there's much more to Vietnamese food. Shopping and dining in the Mills 50 District offers a rich insight into the history and culture of Vietnam and into the community here in Orlando. We caught up with Ricky Lee at a supermarket on Colonial Drive.
Right now we're at Tin Hung Market, right off Colonial in the Mills 50 District. Tin Hung is actually one of the very first Asian markets in town, and it kind of all just grew from here, from one market to another restaurant to another.
Well, let's take a look around.
Yeah. Here in the back, they make their own banh mi sandwiches, Vietnamese subs, some influence from the French using the French baguette. They also make their own soy milk here, and tofu and things like that, so it's really interesting.
How does the French influence come into this?
Well, Vietnam has a long history of colonization, first by the Chinese for 1,000 years, and then in the 1800s by the French. And they took parts of those different cultures and kind of blended together in their own way. For example, through the banh mi sandwich, it is on a French baguette, and they use Chinese barbecue meats and deli meats and also pâté, liver pâté, as a spread. So, you know, their own twist on their cuisine. So it's like a fusion almost.
What do you like to eat in a banh mi sandwich? What's your favorite?
I usually get the special, which has like deli meat, barbecue pork, and even head cheese, pork head cheese, and pâté, and also mayo. So it's really good. And of course, the daikon and carrots, the pickled.
That's a pretty intense flavor combination you're describing there.
Yeah, a little crunchy, a little savory, a little salty, you know, very good.
A quick trip around the aisles reveals many of the typical ingredients found in Vietnamese cooking.
Right here we got like taro root, which is popular in like soups and drinks and things like that. Lots of ginger, shallots. Over there, some bitter melon. Oh, over here we can see some pork belly cuts and pork ear. I don't know, you probably not see that a lot. Beef tripe, pork liver, tendon, stomach.
Mills 50 is the heart of Little Vietnam, but it's not the only part of Orlando where you'll find Vietnamese restaurants.
Oh, actually, recently, a couple new markets and restaurants opened further on the east side. Pho 88, for example, which is located here on Mills, they just opened a second location on Dean and Colonial. Another block away is another giant Asian market called First Spring Oriental Market that just opened.
Just a few blocks north of Colonial, there's a restaurant that speaks to another migration of Vietnamese families to Orlando, this time from Louisiana. This is Kincaid Crawfish.
After Hurricane Katrina, a lot of folks migrated out into other parts of the U.S., and with that, they brought recipes and dishes that they learned while they were in Louisiana. And this is one of the many in town in Orlando of like different Cajun crawfish places owned by Vietnamese families.
Restaurant owner Han Nguyen came to the United States in 1980.
And I live in Louisiana and Mississippi like almost like 17 years for cooking crawfish, gumbo. I have a restaurant in Louisiana and Mississippi like 16 years.
After Hurricane Katrina, Nguyen moved to Orlando, and soon after she opened up her restaurant. At King Cajun, you'll find staples like gumbo, jambalaya, beignets, po' boys, banh mi by another name, and of course, crawfish.
So there's the head and the tail. You kind of pull off the tail, like so, and then suck on the head like this. There's some flavors in there.
There.
Yeah.
So I just.
It's almost like a baby lobster, you know, and then kind of crack down the middle of the crawfish, right here, like this, and then pull it out.
That's it. That's a lot of There's a lot of shell. The shell to meat ratio is quite high.
Quite high. Yes.
So these crawfish come from Louisiana.
Yes. I pick up at the airport. Every morning when I wake up like 6-7 o'clock in the morning, and the first thing I pick up the phone and I call to the airport, hey, what time is my shipment come in? And they say, okay, your shipment come in like about 9 or 10, and I will be there and waiting. Because the crawfish, whenever come, you need to pick it up right away. If you leave it too long, too hot and too cold, it die. If the crawfish die, you have to throw away, you cannot use it.
How many crawfish do you buy in a shipment?
In the weekday, about 100, like 150 pounds. In the weekend, around 200 pounds a day.
Are your kids going to carry on the tradition of cooking Cajun food?
Yes, my older son. And I have three boys, you know, and all my boys here after school, and they have me here or in the weekend. Yeah, all of them.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, and nice to talk to you.
And you can find photographs of our culinary tour of the Mills 50 District with food blogger Ricky Lee on our website at wmfe.org. Follow more stories about Central Florida's Vietnamese community this week on 90.7 News or online at wmfe.org/Vietnam. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.